How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 38 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review, hopefully 5 stars if you're feeling like that too. Find us on audioboom.com as well. You can go on to normantranscript.com to follow my Thunder coverage too. Just head on to the sports tab and wait for that drop down menu and click on Thunder Road, and that's my blog, and you'll find it right there. And you might be wondering, wait a second, it's Monday. Why the heck is there a Locked On Thunder playing? And if you're new to Locked On Thunder, well, everyone here, I guess, is new to Locked On Thunder, considering I just started this, you know, the last week of June or something like that. But if you're really new, like if you started listening in the last month or so, the normal model for this podcast isn't just a couple of times a week like I did in August and the early part of September. I started doing it Tuesdays and Thursdays and like, I guess maybe the middle of August. So just because there isn't all that much basketball to talk about in the middle of the summer, plus, let's be real, like, you don't care about me all that much in August. Like, you don't care about basketball all that much in August. Even my mom is like, sweetie, it's cool it down. No one wants to see that in August. So, you know what? She wasn't like that. She has no idea what basketball consumer won. Actually, funny story. The other day, she looked at the Thunder schedule to see when the Thunder would be in New York to find out when I'd be home, because I'm from New York and she lives in New York. And we were at dinner and she says to me, did you know they play on the Jewish holidays? I tried to say that in my most stereotypical Jewish mother accent possible. Totally unrelated, but solid mom comment at that. Anyway, podcast schedule. No more Tuesdays and Thursdays, as you can tell, considering this is posting on a Monday morning. Training camp starts in 2 weeks. Seriously, like actually 2 weeks. This podcast is out Monday, September 12th. Media day is 2 weeks from Monday, September 12th, September 26th. Crazy, I know. But now I'm going to give Thunder fans all that content. We're back to 5 days a week, every Monday through Friday, just like I was doing at the end of June and in July and all that. And it's going to be Monday through Friday throughout the entire season. So starting now, it's just going to be every single weekday when you're on your commute or whatever it is, you can be able to listen to us during the week. Make sure you subscribe so you can get those every single day on your phone or however you listen to podcasts. I'll be transparent. Our goal here at Locked On is basically to become your habitual listen. We want to be the source that you go to for your team to have in your commute, or maybe you have a job in which you can listen to podcasts, or maybe you're a student and you listen throughout the day, or maybe, you know, whatever it is, you have free time and you like listening to podcasts. We want you to listen to us if you're a fan. That's obviously our goal. Clearly, we're making this so people can listen to us. That's the whole point of a podcast. A podcast that isn't listened to is like a bike that's not ridden. It's just, you know, as Phoebe Buffay would say, the spirit is killed in it. So we just want to be as reliable as possible. It's not just me who's going to 5 days a week either. That's the model for the whole Locked On Podcast Network. All Locked On NBA podcasts, Locked On NFL podcasts, all those are going the Monday through Friday model this week. Locked On NFL ones have already been, all the football ones have been going 5 days a week since, you know, football season started Sunday. And 1 week and the Jets have already broken my heart. How about that? But football season started Sunday and so football's been going at it for a while, and now basketball, we're going to 5 days a week too. I'm excited about it. You can find those podcasts the same spot you'd find Locked On Thunder. Anyway, I'm pretty pumped about basketball too. So why don't we talk about that, huh? Let's talk about some actual basketball. Quick hit and an observation I had this weekend, then I'll answer a couple of listener emails. Actually, listener tweets for the mailbag. But do you guys know B-Ball Breakdown? It's a really good site. It's run by a guy named Coach Nick. So Nick does these great play breakdowns, and especially in the offseason, he hits on longer pieces. His piece on Saturday, it was on Russell Westbrook. And it was a really interesting piece. It was like 11 minutes long. You can find it on Twitter or on B-Ball Breakdown YouTube page. Actually, you know what? No, don't do that. Backtrack. Do not go to the B-Ball Breakdown YouTube page. That is not what you should do. let me actually get a plug in, because I actually wrote a response to Nick's video, which talked about Westbrook's struggles finishing at the rim. That was what the video was on. And the response was over at normantranscript.com, like usual. Like I said before, just head on to my blog on normantranscript.com, then go to the sports tab, drag over that, wait for the drop-down menu, and click on Thunder Road. You can find all my work there, including a reaction to the Westbrook video from B-Ball Breakdown. So, the video basically dispelled the image that Westbrook is a fantastic finisher around the rim just because he's a great athlete. And that is true. Westbrook's obviously a phenomenal athlete. He might be the best athlete in the whole damn league. But he's not statistically a fantastic finisher around the rim. And that's something I've talked about on this podcast, in my writing, probably on other, you know, appearances I've made elsewhere, or whatever it is. Based on the percentages, Westbrook isn't one of the best finishers around the rim in the league. He's just not. If you're going to base it on percentages around the rim, percentages on drives, all that kind of stuff. Per usual, Nick's video wasn't just based on the numbers. He broke down the fundamentals, and he made some really interesting points as to why Westbrook's footwork can become jumbled when he drives at the rim. There's something we have to talk about, though, and I'm not sure this is a reaction to Nick as much as it's a reaction to the reaction of the video in general. Here's a principle we as a society often forget, and I think it's a really important thing, not just in basketball, honestly, just in life. And here's the principle. Just because someone has things to improve on, it doesn't mean he's bad at whatever it is needs improvement. Could Westbrook get better at finishing at the rim? Yeah, absolutely. Of course he can. He's not the best in the league at finishing at the rim. He could play a little less out-of-control style. He can improve his footwork. He could become more measured in his drives to the rim. Of course, adding some of those traits would probably abandon some of the recklessness, which has turned him into a top player anyway. There's that whole let Westbrook be Westbrook principle, which plenty of people have peddled through over the years, and there is merit to that. But even so, Westbrook shot 59% at the rim last year. With his footwork flaws, with his sometimes out-of-control play. 59% at the rim last year, per Basketball Reference. It's above league average for point guards. He's a 58% shooter at the rim in his career, also above league average for point guards. Quantity matters, too. Now, this is something that's important. When I say quantity, I more mean the ratio of shots at the rim versus shots away from the rim. Because your average shot at the rim is a higher percentage shot than your average jump shot. So, because these shots, point guard shoots something like 53, 54% at the rim. Take that, all right? Westbrook in his career is 58%, above average for point guards. Point guards, I forget what the exact number was last year, but it's something like 53, 54%, which is what the average point guard shoots at the rim. Now, 53 or 54% at the rim, even though it's an average shot for a shot at the rim, is still an above-average shot in terms of overall efficiency, because jump shots are less efficient than that, especially two-point jump shots, obviously. Jump shots are less efficient than that. If you shoot 54%, you're averaging 1.08 points per shot, at least. At least 1.08 points per shot. That's easy math. 0.54 times 2, right? So you're averaging 1.08 points per shot. At least that. Because remember, you have to add in foul rate. So once you calculate the points per possessions, and you're getting elite offense once you get that. 1.08 points per shot is a great number on any shot. 1.08 points per shot is really good. And you're getting elite offense once you factor in the foul rate, because foul rate is the highest it's going to be on any type of shot at the rim. That's where the most shooting fouls occur. Even after factoring turnovers, just from an average finisher inside the rim, you're going to get elite offense if you can get to the rim. And that's the big if you can get to the rim. That's why quantity matters. That's why the ratio of your shots actually matters. Because of that, the most important part of finishing around the rim is actually getting to the rim. Because even if you can be an average finisher at the rim, if you factor in foul rate, if you factor in those free throws you're getting from it, even including the turnovers, your points per possession, not just points per shot, but points per possession, because you're factoring in the bad and the turnovers and the missed shots, and you're factoring the good and the made shots and the free throws that you get out of it. Your points per possession is going to be excellent, even if you're an average finisher around the rim. And that's why the amount of shots you take at the rim matters. That's why people talk about you want to get shots at the rim and you want to get your corner threes and your threes around the rim, because those are the most efficient shots that you can get. And for individuals, you want guys who have a high ratio of shots at the rim. That's a more efficient player. And Westbrook, while he is not percentage-wise the best finisher around the rim. And while he's not fundamentally the best finisher around the rim, because there are guys with craftier moves. Kyrie Irving has craftier moves. He has better footwork, too. Kyrie Irving, in my opinion, is the best point guard finisher around the rim in the league. He can make every kind of layup. He is so coordinated on layups. It's unbelievable how good he is at layups. Westbrook, though, is unbelievable. He's as good as any other point guard in the league at actually getting to the rim. And where those shots, while they're not the most efficient they could possibly be if he maximized his fundamental work, they are way more efficient than any other type of shot that you're going to get in the offense. And Westbrook is amazing at getting into the rim. It's where his athleticism comes in. As Nick notes, he was sixth in the league in drives. That's really good. He's getting to the hoop a lot. He's driving to the hoop. And he was doing it inside an offense that often had spacing issues last year. That was sixth in the league in drives this past season. In an offense that had spacing issues. In an offense where guys were ecstatic to help off of Andre Robertson to come in and help in the lane when Westbrook would hit the paint. In an offense where guys weren't always closing out on Serge Ibaka late in the year. Where guys were, you know, excited to jump off of him in pick and roll scenarios and pick and pop scenarios. Just to be able to get on Westbrook because he's so threatening when he gets in the paint. Westbrook still getting into the lane, sixth in the league in drives. And you know what? Still had a solid efficiency on drives. He's up there in attempts in the paint amongst guards too. He has one of the best foul rates in the NBA amongst guards. He gets to the line amongst guards about as much as anybody else. So even if his finishing ability isn't the best in the NBA, Russell Westbrook is still one of the league's best finishers, but it's for other reasons. It's for reasons other than the finishing. It's the stuff that happens before the finishing, and it's what his whole game is based on. He can get better, no question. Obviously, he can get better. I mean, look, anyone can get better if you're going to use that cliche, right? But there are actual things that you can point out, and you can say, all right, his footwork can get better. I don't know if that means... if that takes away his, you know, recklessness that makes him so good. I mean, recklessness is a severe compliment because that's what makes him so good. That he is just, he plays at a different pace from every other human on the court. And that makes him tremendous. But I think he could probably ways to improve his footwork, and I'm sure it's something he's worked at. He has a big work ethic. So I'm sure that's been a point for him for a long time. And I'm sure he can get better at it. But that doesn't mean that he isn't already good. And that's an important concept to remember when you talk about Russell Westbrook. A couple of questions before we head out from John Murray. Again, I couldn't take everybody's question, but you know, I'm going 5 days a week, so when I take these questions now, I'll have some guests later this week, but when I take these questions now, I'm spreading them out because we're going 5 days a week, and you know, you'll have me a lot now. So don't worry. Be persistent with your questions. If you have good ones, I'll make sure to take them at some point. First one from John Murray. From him, most important question, what's the front court rotation? So I know I've hinted at it, but I'm not sure I addressed the actual whole rotation specifically on the podcast, so I think I'll just do that now. Obviously, the guards are easier than the front court, which is why I assume John asked about the front court specifically. Anyway, you're obviously going to have Westbrook, Oladipo, and Payne are going to be getting playing time. Westbrook, I assume Westbrook's around 36 minutes. I assume Oladipo's in that 33 to 36 minute sweet spot, something like that. Cameron Payne, I think, is going to get his looks, assuming he's healthy. And the Thunder say they do expect him back from that Jones fracture, from the surgery he had on that this offseason. They say they do expect him back by that from that for the start of the season. So that's good news for them. I do expect some more consistency out of Payne this year. He was inconsistent last year, but that could have something to do with the fact that he was playing with a foot injury for much of last season and that he was young and maybe in a second year with, you know, putting a little more weight on, he can get a little better at that. You know, Abrinas and Morrow I kind of expect to be in and out of the rotation. Morrow, I think, is a matchup guy at this point. Billy Donovan clearly was not enthralled with his defense last year, and that kind of left him in and out of the rotation. I do think he's a more important player to this team this year because he's one of the very few shooters on the roster, and they're going to need to use him as a floor spacer throughout the year. But he's not much of a mover. He's not really much of a guy you're going to run off screens, that kind of stuff. That's more of Abrinas' type. So if Abrinas can prove, I mean, look, I don't know what to think of Abrinas, honestly. I expect, because he's a 22-year-old rookie who was a second-round pick a couple of years ago, that he'll be in and out of the rotation too at best, because I just don't think it's fair to expect from a non-top five pick to be anything other than that. I mean, the best rookies aren't actually really good players. Like, Andrew Wiggins won Rookie of the Year a couple of years ago. He wasn't a really good player. Karl Anthony Towns is the exception. Kristaps Porzingis is the exception. Nikola Jokic, he's the exception. Last year was a particularly polished rookie class. Guy was a second-round pick in 2013 and is playing, you know, his first games in the NBA this year. I don't expect anything from other than in and out of the rotation throughout the year. Now, maybe he's better than I expect, and that's, I guess that's plausible, but, you know, I guess you can't really prove me wrong here because my thesis is I don't know. And that's about the only stand that I'm taking on Abrines for now. I think Robertson's going to start at the three just because I think this team is going to go all in on defense, and I think he's an excellent perimeter defender. I do think they're going to give Singler a try off the bat. I really do. I think we're going to see Singler get minutes, and I think he's going to get an opportunity, not just because of his contract and because he has 3 years left on it, but because he's still a 37% career three-point shooter. And I've talked about this before. I think it's important that the Thunder try to scrounge up as much shooting as they possibly can from all different areas. And if they can, you know, get lucky with Singler, who's a capable on-ball defender, if they can kind of recover him and he can return to anything close to what his play was like in Detroit, where he was a quality 3-and-D guy. I mean, he was a playable rotation player. If they can get close to that, that's a big win for them. That's a big recovery. Now, if he plays like he did last year, you don't have to keep playing him. But I think they need to find out if last year was just a down year, because it's not like he, you know, became 40 years old. He's still in his 20s. So I think they need to find out if last year was just a down year or if it's something that's the new trend for Singler. Eustis, they just, you know, we got 5 games from him last year. He shot 31% from 3 in the D-League. We haven't seen his three-point shooting improve. If his three-point shooting miraculously gets better, then that's a big hit. That's a big deal for him because, you know, he's a really good athlete and he can provide really good athleticism on the wings, running the floor and playing some defense out there. But you know, he's not going to handle the ball and he's proven to be difficult to integrate onto the offensive end. And I don't think he's quite good enough as Robertson to where you can justify playing him purely because of his defense. And that's really been the issue, so I don't expect much out of Eustis. Now for the bigs. Adams is going to start. I'd be surprised if Ilyasova didn't start next to him. They're just the best offensive match. Again, Ilyasova's got to start. It's just shooting. There's just not a lot of shooting on the roster. And Ilyasova's got to provide some, and I think he works best next to Adams. Kanter, I think, is going to get more minutes than he got last year. Because you know what? I expect Kanter to improve on defense. I really do. I think he's going to be better. He improved last year on defense. He was far from great, but he got a lot better than he was a couple of years ago, and I think that's going to happen again this year. I don't think he's ever going to be great, but I think he's going to get better. He plays hard. He's got a good work ethic, and he's learning. And I do expect some kind of improvement to make him a little more playable. And the Thunder are going to need some offensive help. No, I don't think he's going to get 30 minutes, but I think 20, mid-20s seems about right off the bench. That seems good to me. Now, the issue with predicting the Thunder front court right now is we don't know exactly what the team is going to be. They have 16 guys whose contracts are going to be guaranteed at the start of the year. Now, at the start of the year, you're only allowed to have 15 guys on your roster. So do the math. Someone who's on the team right now is not going to be on the team. They've got 3 point guards. They're not going to enter the year at 2 point guards when they just signed Ronnie Price to a 2-year deal. And they have Cameron Payne as a 21-year-old second-year player who they're high on and drafted in the first round last year. Pretty sure Russell Westbrook's sticking around. Nothing's happening with the point guards. They're short on wings. If they're insanely low on Eustis, you know, you could trade him for a second-round pick. Trade him into some in space for a second-round pick. But you're really low on wings, and you got 7 bigs. The intuitive choice is they trade one of their bigs. Now, this scenario occurred after they traded for Joffre LeVert. And the intuitive choice is they get rid of one of their bigs. I am going to rank the rotation as if Mitch McGarry is the big man who's not going to be in there. Now, that's not because I have any information saying that Mitch McGarry is the one to go, but I do think the easiest trade to make is trading Mitch McGarry for a future second-round pick to a team that can just take him into space. Send him to Philly for a future second-round pick or something like that. You know, for a team that wants to try to pick on a reclamation project for a first-round pick who was only in the first round a couple years ago and is still in his early 20s. I think that's the easiest move to make. Now, trading on a scanner is obviously something a lot of people have talked about, but that's a more complicated trade. There's a lot more money involved. You're going to need to get back a lot more than you would for McGarry. That's clearly a more intense trade negotiation. I think if the Thunder put out feelers for McGarry, I think they could get back a second-round pick or something like that, future second-round pick that's heavily protected, and they could just say, let's, you know, it's essentially in theory a release, but in practice, it's a trade. So I'm assuming McGarry's the one that's gone. I'm going to assume Kanter gets mid-20s minutes. In that case, I think LaVerne and Sabonis, after thinking about it, I think they'll go back and forth as the fourth bigs. Both of them can play the four and the five. Both of them, I think, are more capable as a four than Kanter. I just don't like Kanter on defense at the four. I think he'll play some four based on matchups, as he should, because there are certain matchups that obviously work, just like it worked in the Spurs series last year in the playoffs. But, you know, in principle, on average, I think Kanter's much better as a five. You know, that's you know, he's just better on defense when he's closer to the basket, when he doesn't have to defend as much in space. I think he's better with that. And so I think you're going to have LaVerne and Sabonis. Saberne, that's a solid celebrity couple name for your fourth bigs on the Thunder. But LaVerne and Sabonis, I think those are going to be the two guys. And Collison might get some, you know, gritty minutes mixed in there because he's Nick Collison. But I don't see him getting a whole ton of playing time. I think it's really going to be those five guys with numbers four and five getting some mixed in time. From Nate on Twitter, Could Adrian Griffin's time with the Bucks, Bulls, and Magic be a good indicator of what kind of defense the Thunder will try to implement? So I think they're going to change their defenses here. Now, some background on Adrian Griffin. Adrian Griffin he's played in the league for a little while. He's been an assistant for a while. He was an assistant under Tom Thibodeau with the Bulls, under Scott Skiles with the Bucks, and then under Scott Skiles once again with the Magic this past year. He's basically taken that. He's basically the Monty Williams replacement as an assistant on the bench. That's Griffin's role this year, and he's played for some good defensive coaches. Now, we've seen hard, strong defenses from teams that he's been on. Now, I'll preface this statement with, it's basically impossible to know the influence that assistants have on a team. Like, even when assistants get hired as head coaches, that's organizations taking gambles on assistants. It really is. You don't know for sure. It's really hard. So guessing what an assistant did in one place and seeing how that would go in another place is really hard. It might be impossible, especially if you're not someone who sit down and have the job interview with Adrian or with whomever else. That's hard. But here are some things we do know. He's worked well under Tibbs in that strong side overload defense. Now, that's a defense that basically took over the league. That's a defense that tons of defenses in the league have tried to mimic ever since Tibbs really started it going, with years as being an assistant and obviously with the Bulls. And he worked for Tibbs with the Bulls. Now, I think the Thunder are going to play this year a more aggressive role. They're going to play a more aggressive style of defense, I think. And I actually have an article about this up on normantranscript.com. Again, you can check that out in my blog, Thunder Road. But I have a piece about that. I think the Thunder are going to play an aggressive defense. Basically, I think the personnel just calls for it. Westbrook and Oladipo are explosive guards who have natural tendencies that, you know, have them gambling all the time at the top of your defense. I think if you extend that defense, you trap a lot. You extend to beyond the three-point line. You basically institute principles that allow Westbrook and Oladipo to jump passing lanes, for Westbrook to try to, you know, poke out a ball from behind when he's going around the ball screen because he's just going to do it anyway. So if you allow for those sorts of things, you you make Steven Adams a more intuitive helper. He's a little more ready in that sense. He can expect those things. Same thing with Andre Roberson, who I think is also a really disciplined defender. I think they could play one of the more aggressive defenses. On top of that, you're going to force more live ball turnovers that way, and I think they're going to be a really good transition team. I also think transition is going to be really important for them because they're going to have spacing issues in the half court. And if they can get out in transition more, force mismatches, even if they don't score on the fast break, once they get into their half-court offense, if they can force a mismatch in transition, all of a sudden you got, you know, a big man guarding Westbrook because he had to pick him up because Westbrook was flying down the court so fast and they had to pick him up to stop a basket or something. Or, you know, you have a wing guarding Steven Adams or a point guard guarding Steven Adams, whatever it is. Those are mismatches you can take advantage of. That can solve the issues you might have with spacing on certain possessions. And I think all those things, you arrive there by playing an aggressive style of defense. So I think that's going to happen. I just think that's the intuitive choice. Now, Billy Donovan and his entire coaching staff know a lot more about basketball than I do. Shocking, I know. So there are possibly more creative situations in which they can think of, in which I could say, oh yeah, that makes sense. But from my perspective, where I'm sitting, I think a really aggressive defense that kind of plays on some of those traits that I talked about before, I think that makes a lot of sense for this team. Now, bringing in Griffin, that's probably going to help. He's got a reputation as a really good defensive coach. So that's probably going to help. And the Thunder have a pretty good assistant coaching staff anyway. A lot of those guys have been big for the development in their guys. So, I think it's hard to say what his exact impact is going to be specifically to him because, you know, assistants are, they're quiet and they're behind the scenes and it's just really hard to know the specifics of it. Before we head out, remember I'm on every weekday now, Monday through Friday. If you're subscribed to the show, you'll be all good on getting those. It's going to be in your inbox or whatever it is. I don't know how people listen to this. It's going to be wherever it is. Every morning, so you can listen to it once it posts up. I usually post them around 12:05 local time wherever I am. So at 12:05 a.m. those will be up. So if you can't sleep, it'll be there. Or if you want to listen to them in the morning, or you know, days in the future, they're on the internet forever. It's the beauty of the internet. Again, if you're subscribed, you'll be fine on getting those. You can head onto iTunes and subscribe there, and you can also leave a review once you're there as well. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FREDKATZ. And you can log on to my blog, once again, Thunder Road, on normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out that blog once you're there. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. Plan on having some guests later in the week, too. Until next time, though, Locked on Thunder is locking up.
Fashion hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10/2 to 10/10. Select styles only.